And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Fellow auto detailers, welcome to the show that features interviews with today's most successful auto detailers. This is the Auto Detailing Podcast. Here's your host, Jimbo Balaam.
All right, guys, before we get started, I want to thank today's sponsor of the show. Of course, that is The Better Software Company. They're doing a great job helping powering this podcast. And my favorite, one of my favorite features, I guess, because I have so many favorites, but one of my favorite features this month, this week currently, is the vehicle checklist form. Now, in all the Facebook groups and all that, I see a lot of guys needing a vehicle checklist form. Why? Because it just keeps the communication clear between your client and you about what you're going to do, how much it's going to cost, previous damage, and damage that you cannot fix that's existing on the car. It keeps that line of communication wide open, very clear, to save your butt. The Better Software Company has that form built in, and it's attached to each customer. So say a customer does accuse you down the line of scratching their car, denting their car, ripping the seat, you name it, whatever, you can search that customer and all their vehicle checklist forms will pop up very easily. Now, is there other ways to go about this and do this? Yes. But what the advantage that the Better Software Company has made is that it's all in one place. And if you're busy, if a customer complains, you want to be able to settle that dispute, settle that claim quickly, efficiently, and just get it done with, because you're busy getting new clients, doing all this other stuff. So the benefit of the Better Software Company is that it's all in one easy-to-use platform, saved on the cloud. You're not downloading anything to your computer, any of that. So if you're interested in at least checking that out and seeing what it may look like, which I would at the bare minimum highly recommend, you can go to thebettersoftwarecompany.com. That's thebettersoftwarecompany.com. Tell them Jimbo sent you and they're going to give you a free demo. Oh, hey, I almost forgot. You are going to want to listen to not only this week's episode, because it is phenomenal, but next week's episode. This is a little teaser for next week's episode. That's going to be episode 261. Darren and I have a huge announcement. You are not going to want to miss this. Whether you're a driveway detailer, an enthusiast, a pro detailer, we're going to be offering something that is crazy. So I want to tell you guys so much more, but I want to hold off till next week's episode, because we're really going to dive into what it's all about. So enjoy this week's episode with Darren and I, and keep your ears open for next week's episode, because it is going to blow the socks off of most of you, and you guys are going to be super stoked that we are going to be giving you what we're going to be giving you. So look forward to seeing you in episode 261, but also look forward to hearing your feedback on this episode, episode 260 with Darren Priest. All right, welcome to episode 260 of the Auto Detailing Podcast. This is just Jimbo, your host, and today I brought back the man, the myth, the legend, Darren Priest from Auto Fetish Detail. Darren, what's going on?
Oh, wow. Now,
now, when I said I was not prepared and I may talk out of both ends, I was being totally serious.
Well, good, because I talk out of both ends myself, so we're on the same page with that.
And yours don't smell coming out of the other end. Anyway.
Anyway, my voice may change, but my breath still smells the same out of that end. How about that?
Nice. And, you know, we drove to Vegas together, and then the day after we got back had like a 2-hour phone conversation, and we continue to have these hour-long conversations, and we both come to the conclusion of like, man, maybe we should record these, you know, and let other people in on that. So for everyone listening, that's what this podcast episode is going to be. We're going to be talking about auto detailing myths, which I can never say that word, myths. And a little bit geared for the detailer that's maybe looking at starting his business, but who knows? We may venture off that path, and if we do, I'm totally fine with that. And just so everyone else knows, Darren, I know you already know this, but you have no idea what we're going to talk about.
I am Darren Priest, and I approve that message. yes, I have no. Well, I know what we're going to talk about. I don't. That's all I know is the context of where you're going to pull these from and throw at me. I have no advanced preparation, put it that way.
Right. And these questions, I put it out on Facebook a couple days ago in the Detailing for Dummies group and Detailing for Money group, asking what the lies or the false truths that, or the myths, if I could say that word better, I would just say that, what they were before they started detailing and then as they got going in their business, realized that they were just that, just false truths. So you guys, there was like 40 comments. It was ridiculous. It was awesome. So these questions stem from that post that I'm trying to pull up again. So anyway, let's get into...
We could just call it the BS of the industry.
The BS of the industry. That would nail it. So the first one, Darren, that I want to pose to you is that it's easy to get customers. And these are in no specific order, by the way, or they're completely random. So it's easy to get customers. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I have a lot that instantly starts streaming through my head. And perhaps this is where I would ask you, and we can change as we go. Sure. Are you curious to get my response and then add your response?
I don't know. We'll just
go with the flow.
We're just going with the flow.
Okay. So interestingly enough, I was having this conversation with my son today over the phone, who virtually every one of my children has gone out and worked with me, detailing cars literally as a professional, meaning they're my helper. And yes, I do pay them, in case you're wondering that. And he was having a conversation with his friend. And his friend says, "Hey, dude, we got to start a detailing business." And the first thing that came out of my son's mouth was laughter, because he's lived it. He has grown up in a household of a detailer, which is his dad. And he just laughed and he just said, "Good luck with that." And the reason I add that is because asking that question, I think the polar opposite, which is, is that really a myth that it's easy to get customers? Because in my opinion, the polar opposite exists, which is one of the top questions guys ask is, how do I get customers? Which would strongly suggest to me that it's not easy, that in fact, it's one of the most difficult things to do is, how do you get customers?
Exactly. And that's just to jump in, all these statements or things that we go through, they're all myths. Gosh, that's horrible to say that word. When I'm being facetious when I say it's easy to get customers.
Okay, yeah. So it is not easy. I can't speak for you. I know how long you've been in the business. Now, because I've been in it, you know, way past the introduction of the internet. So a lot of my thinking and experience comes from that old school mentality. As a person, I try to not limit myself to old school thinking, and I try to be current, and I do my best to stay update myself with technology, which obviously I do to a degree because of websites and videos and what have you. But so what applies today is not what worked for me back in the day, but certainly, is it easy? Not in the least. But there is ways, which I know you can attest to this, of how to get customers effectively and far easier than old school type of mentality. if that. And I can expound.
But would you say, so it seems like, you know, in one sense, I want to say the internet has made it easier to get clients. And at the same time, the internet has made it harder to get clients. And I feel like there's so much that can be learned from the days of getting clients before the internet. And also, and some of those techniques and tactics could be used very effectively even still. And yet when you mix them in with some new school thinking tactics, whatever you want to call it, you can really dominate, you know, a market, you know,
and that's
what you can attest to.
Oh, I'm sorry. Say that last sentence.
I was going to say, which you can attest to.
Yeah. Because I get, and I'm at a level, I'm pulling this number out of my backside, but without crunching the numbers specifically, 90% of my business every month is brand new customers that I get fed to me without doing any advertising whatsoever as far as paid advertising that comes strictly through either YouTube, which then forces people to go to my website. So it's all about my website. So my YouTube channel feeds people to my website who then call me. So it literally is all about the internet conversion. And really, this is such an expansive topic. You and I could talk on this one subject alone probably 3 hours easily.
Which we actually should do when we each have an extra 3 hours.
I know.
We should really sit down. I would really enjoy that, to do like an in-depth, like super long format show. Again, that's a rabbit trail, but
yes,
I'm putting that out on the table.
So meaning you can move on to the next myth,
okay,
and we could work our way through this. It's totally your show. You just tell me.
Let's do that. Let's move. I just want to make sure that we're giving maybe a little takeaway for each thing of like, hey, this is a false truth, but this is maybe one tip to I just want to make sure we don't go through this whole episode and it's just a whole ramble fest.
Yes.
You know?
So maybe what I could add to that is that by no means is it easy, unless, and that's the caveat, that if you have the right knowledge and the right tools and the right understanding, it actually can be very doable and far easier than maybe you would think. Mm-hmm. So if you know the strategy, which to me is all about the internet, you absolutely can apply the right techniques and you can get seriously, you could get business day one if you just know the right techniques.
And
absolutely.
I guess this is where my shameless plug would be. If you want to get clients day one, you could take the Google AdWords course. And
bingo.
So thanks, bingo. Thanks for that softball. And I'm excited on myth number two. I'm excited to hear your input on this one. Again, there's no specific order to this at all. It's a complete crapshoot. But this one has more to do with technique, and that is you must use the two bucket method.
These
are so perfect for you, Darren. So perfect. Yes, I can't believe how perfect this was. And by the way, you coming onto the show and doing this with me was a last minute decision. So I really didn't tailor these to like, oh, would Darren answer this good? You know, but this is perfect. I can't believe this.
Yes, the stars clearly have aligned.
They have. Tell us your opinion of the two bucket method.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so let me just apply a ridiculous sense of logic here. If it's kind of like the, as society, we've been groomed, if good is good, then better is better and best is best, which is me saying that if two is good, then three must be better, right? Because we've all been groomed to think more is always better. So if we're going to follow that line of logic, then why limit yourself to two buckets? Why not three buckets? Why not four? Why not five? Why not go down the list? I mean, honestly, and we could just get to a point of absolute absurdity. And of course, someone out there that embraces the whole two bucket method, which I say, hey, if two buckets works for you and you like it, then by all means, stick with it. And I'm pretty much going to say that about anything. If you have a system that's working for you, then stick with it. But I could shoot holes in virtually anyone's system and say, hey, because in my world, it's all about efficiency and effectiveness. Mm-hmm. Those are two different things. So if you don't mind spending more time doing something because you've been trained or you're under the illusion that that's the better method because everyone on the internet says so, or you see all these videos of all these different, you know, so-called experts that say, oh, two buckets, that's the way to go. It's like, well, shoot, if we're going to follow that logic, why not get a third bucket? Because two's good, then three must be better. Mm-hmm. So, but in my world, I have endless workarounds, I call them. So I literally, the only time I've even ever used the two bucket method is for a video when I was demonstrating the ONR. And so I am not a fan. I'll go on record and say, I'm not an advocate of the two bucket method. Doesn't work.
I'll go on record and say I've never used the two bucket method. Yeah. I mean, honestly.
I own two buckets, by the way. They're somewhere between my van and garage, whatever. But no, I do not use the two bucket method. If you like it, go with it.
Sure.
But once again, it's kind of like that first question. Do I know a workaround? Do I know how to circumvent that? Absolutely. Can I produce the same results? Absolutely. And perhaps I could argue that I could produce better results in far less time than not using the two bucket method.
And my my takeaway would be just to use a waterless car wash solution like an ONR.
Right.
Very simple.
Yeah.
All right, number three. that was good. That was concise, to the point, and we both went on the record to something that we're going to get a bunch of heat for, but that's okay. So
yes, bring it on.
Which I always think that's funny when people say on the record. It's like, okay, I know. Whatever. Anyway, number three, I'm my own boss now. I'm going to have so much free time.
Yeah. which so leads good. Me back. It leads me back to that conversation I had with my son this morning, because that was literally exactly where that trail led him and his friend. Because first his friend was saying, I've got to add two people a little context here, which is I have five kids. You have three now, right, Jimbo?
I do, and we're done. Yeah. On the record, we're done.
Yes, and I am absolutely done.
Hopefully.
Meaning I have taken physical steps to make sure I am done. Short of castrating myself. Anyhow, the point of that is five kids, and they're all at the age now. The oldest is 23. The youngest is 17. And it's becoming a theme around our household of, wow, Dad, what am I going to do in life? And the reason I add that is, once again, to apply some context with this conversation my son is having with one of his buddies that he knows from wrestling. So his buddy's like, oh, dude, I don't know what I'm going to do in life. I've got some ideas. My kids are all struggling with it. You and I both know that dimension and that struggle, and it's real. Mm. And it's difficult. And so his buddy's like, dude, we should start a detailing business. That's when my son laughed. And he's like, good luck with that. unless you're very passionate, I suggest not. And then the guy then segued into, hey, I was thinking of starting an online business, like creating a website, which you and I both know what that's like. And my son laughed again, because the guy says, yeah, I think that'd be cool. Or I would be my own boss. You know, the typical responses of people, essentially what it is people on the outside looking in and coming to what I call superficial conclusions, like, oh, wow. And my own kids do it. And we've had to set the record straight because, for example, my wife is in outside sales. And so she has a certain amount of flexibility, meaning we don't show up at the same office space, punch in a time card. We have to be there at 8 and we get a clock out at night or at 9 o'clock. That's not our world. And so for me, it includes detailing, hands-on, It includes buying chemicals, cleaning my towels, go down the list. But a large part of it includes on this computer. Mm-hmm. And because I do have a certain amount of flexibility, but often people think of flexibility as like, oh, part-time. Well, my dad only works part-time. And so because I'm at home, even though I'm on my computer working, which is what half the world does, is they sit at a desk and work. But because I'm not touching a car, my kids somehow came to this conclusion like, oh, well, dad only works part-time anyways. So he's always available. So we'll just call dad. It's like, okay, so let me clarify things for you kids. By part-time, if you mean I work half days, then yes, I work the first half of every day. And if you did the math, you'd realize that's 12 hours. And I've worked, you know, 12-hour days most of my working life. Mm-hmm. And so being your own boss, it's like, yes, you can be your own boss. Yes, do I have control over my schedule? But by, you know, it's just a gross oversimplification by people on the outside looking in and kind of assessing like, oh, wow, that Darren or that Jimbo, man, look at their schedule. So much flexibility. They get to call the shots, you know, go down the list. And by the way, what was the original myth that we're trying to bust here?
I'm my own boss now. I have so much free time.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess yes and no. And I know you can appreciate this, Jimbo, which is, yeah, I could choose to not work today, but I'm also deciding that I'm also not going to get paid today either.
Right.
So if you're making enough on those other days, then yeah, you have more of a choice. But at a level, everyone has a choice. If you're working for the man, you could call in sick if you want. So I could say, oh, well, you're your own boss. You could call in sick. You could take days off, whatever. But you're limited by those days, and you're still limited because you are working for someone. And then I could say, well, just go find another job. How's that for flexibility? You can go find another job. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, you're your own boss. But no, absolutely, it's I get it where people have that conclusion. But I think what people don't understand is how much work goes on behind the scenes.
Yes.
That you just can't fully appreciate until you live it. And whether it's doing your podcast, mm-hmm. me shooting videos, working on my website, you working on yours, you just don't realize until you live it or until you've asked someone firsthand.
And specifically with whether you're going to do a podcast or video or some sort of activity online to try to reach a broader audience, or you're just going to work online to or work on your website to try and capture more business in your local area, there's this whole not a stigma, but like I'm on my phone a lot and I'm on Facebook a lot. Because that's my world. You know, I'm on right. my website a lot. I'm on Google a lot, whatever. So I'm on my phone all the time. So people always think like, oh, you're so rude. You're on your phone. I'm like, no, but I'm working.
Right.
Or I'm responding yes. to an email. Or I'm responding to a Facebook message or whatever. You know, and it's like sometimes people are like, oh, you don't work. It's like, or you only worked a half day, to use your
yes.
example. And it's like, right. well, yes, I was physically working on a car half day, but then yes. I spent the next 12 hours of the day, you know, until my eyes started bleeding, you know, looking right. at a screen. You
know? my retina's dried up to the point where I couldn't see anymore.
Literally, I had to take a break, you know, or my voice is, you know, like we were talking yesterday, I did that 2-hour long interview with Matt Mormon, and right. I came home and well, I didn't come home. I went to my hiding spot and then and literally hid out for an hour, you know, because yeah, I couldn't gotta breathe.
Recover. Yeah, yeah, you need this recovery time. I mean, it really is a rude awakening. And, you know, at a level, I hate even addressing this stuff only in the context that it would discourage someone from doing it. And by no means do I want people on the receiving end of this to think that, oh, wow, you guys, you're just shooting holes in my dreams and my visions, whatever. It's like, no, I'm not. I want people to pursue whatever it is they want to pursue. I also just want them to be as informed as possible. So I would not want it to be taken, you know, out of context or misconstrued, thinking like, oh, wow, like what a buzzkill Darren is. He's just going to, you know, tell us how difficult and hard it is. It's like, hey, it is. I'm just going to be upfront with you and say it's more work than you anticipate. But you could say that about everything in life. How many of us would have kids if we knew how heart ripping and wrenching that can be?
Right.
Or how many of us would go to college if we knew all the hoops you would have to jump through or start a business? You could say about anything in life.
Yeah. All right. Myth. I think we've beat that one to a dead horse. The next one is, I can't wait to get rich quick with my new detailing business. And these these are playing so good into your conversation that your son had with this friend.
It's like, seriously, the stars truly aligned.
It's crazy.
Because that was part of exactly, just worded differently, but exactly the point that my son's friend also said. He says, dude, it's quick money. And once again, my son just laughed. And he's like, because my son literally, and I have three sons, just so you guys know, three sons, two daughters. So my son worked for me. He's one of my kids that worked for me longer than the other kids. Mm-hmm. So he's lived it and he knows. And so he laughed again. He says, oh yeah, quick money, huh? It's like, well, you know, once again, good luck with that. So I went on to explain to him that, like, okay, I understand where people come to that conclusion, because there's a lot of areas of business that you could go into, a lot of companies you could work for. So you kind of have this automatic separation, like, okay, do I want to go into business for myself? Do I want to work for the man? Okay, there's your first fork in the road. Okay, now you're going down the road, like, I want to work for myself. Okay, what am I going to choose? Well, there's certain industries, detailing is one of them, that really doesn't require a whole lot of capital. And at a lot of levels, you can fake it till you make it, because that's where your audience, which is your car owners of the world, are pretty ignorant. They really don't know a whole lot about detailing. They can look at a car and say, oh, it's clean, it's shiny, it's detailed, whatever. So I get it. It's easy to get into, and therefore the suggestion is that it's quick money, because if we can get into it easily, therefore we can begin making money quicker rather than later. So, yes, I guess it's a both a yes and a no. Yes, if you were to pick other industries that require more capital, more equipment, more whatever, more training, then that would be more difficult. But detailing, yeah, that's why a lot of guys get into it. A, we like cars. B, we can become our own boss and have our own schedule, or whatever that other question was. But the reality is it's still going to require work. But in context of choosing other options, it is easier, which means it's relative. So it's just easier to make money. So yeah, it could be a yes and no answer.
I agree with everything he said. And on that same thread, speaking of customers getting work, making money, another myth would be everybody is my customer. Now this would be speaking from the detailer.
Yeah. And that's one of the, cause I have a list going that I was telling you about of, and I don't remember how I labeled it. I tried to look through it or for it real quickly. Mm-hmm. I can't find it, but common myths. You know, one of them is we discussed in another conversation about, oh, layering wax. Oh, this sealant can be layered. This wax can be layered. Or Johnny customer says, I just need a couple of good coats of wax. It's like, oh, okay. Well, anyhow. So
let me get you the good wax instead of the bad wax. I'll finish that thought for you.
Thank you. And now I just lost my train of thought. What was restate the question? For
everybody is my customer.
Oh yeah. Thank you. So that is the big, that, to me, that's the one is that is the one of the big mind F's, and I'm going to keep it clean here, because especially like, for example, you and I, we live in Southern California. It is a rather affluent part of not only the entire world, but the country, the state of California. It's very affluent here in what we call the OC bubble. And a lot of people don't know what that means, because here in OC, there is quite a bit of money, especially if you go to certain communities and specifically the coastal communities. And what's a big mind F is I can literally drive in my own neighborhood. Like, I live on a golf course, and I know that's going to sound glamorous, but just so you know, I don't have a golf course view, and I don't live in a big fancy house. It's just a, you know, upper middle class house that happens to be part of a golf course community. So I can literally drive around the block, and people will own Bentleys, they'll own Teslas, Ferraris. I don't see many Lamborghinis in my city, but I do, because just down the street, there's a high-end exotic car dealership. And then 2 miles down the road, there's another high-end car, exotic car dealership. And there's a Mercedes dealership, there's a BMW dealership, there's a Range Rover, there's a Jaguar, all within a 3 mile radius of my house. Never mind if you go to like Newport Coast, Newport Beach, and where you live, Seal Beach. I mean, we see these cars every day. I mean, I can pick an intersection of certain parts of where you and I live, Jimbo. And I can count, like, literally, because there's going to be so many of them. It's like, and my wife and I have played this game. We'll go to Corona Del Mar, anyone that's familiar with this area. Very affluent beach city. And it's fun to, like, okay, what is what we call the car de jour? What is the high-end car of the day? Where certain days we'll go and we'll think like, oh my gosh, that's the fourth Ferrari that we've passed already and we've barely gotten here. Or that's the fifth Tesla we've seen. Or that's the third Lamborghini we've seen. Or the fourth Rolls Royce. Or the fifth Bentley. It's like they're everywhere. But what people don't get is that just because – it's kind of like the proverbial statement – just because you can own a Ferrari doesn't mean you know how to drive one or have the skills to drive one on a track or even have a clue of how to even park it. Honestly, you just have to have the money. So what is a mind F is that, especially if they came to an affluent place like this, that every car owner, because as detailers or someone that's looking to increase their business, you're going to look at every car owner as having a target on their back. It's like, oh, they have a car. Surely they're my customer. Well, surely they're not. And what's I call the mind F is that everywhere you and I travel, we're surrounded by high-end cars, Mercedes, BMWs, Jaguars, go down the list. And you think, surely those people have enough money to afford detailing services. And yet, why do their cars look like caca? You know why? Because it's detailers or people in the business that maybe lack enough experience. They're connecting dots that should not be connected automatically because a detail customer is not predicated on the type of car they own. And that's kind of a mystery, or would be a mystery if people saw behind the scenes for me. Is and I have people say this, you know, whether I'm at the gym, the market, whatever, and they find out what I do, or they know what I do because we've been friends for a while. They're like, oh, Darren, you only work on such and such. It's like, well, you'd be surprised. I don't just work on exotics or luxury or whatever, because really my ideal customer is someone that shops value, not price. I'm not after the price shoppers. I'm after the value shoppers. So I work on everything. Now, granted, I don't work on a whole lot of turds or, you know, grocery getters, you could call them.
Hoopties.
Or minivans, that type of stuff. What did you just say?
Hoopties.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with that term.
It would just be like a beater.
Okay. So granted, it's still a kind of a select group of people, but it's by no means am I showing up to, you know, Bentleys, Ferraris, Lamborghinis, Jaguars, whatever, every day. Mm. By no means. Do I touch them? Absolutely. But that is a mind F thinking that people with money or people that maintain the pretense of money are automatically going to be your customer. And I totally disagree with that. But that, to kind of swing it back around, is where the power of the internet comes in. And that's what I use my websites for, is to literally pre-sell people. When they go to my website, they can see how I talk, how I write, and I talk to people. And essentially, if someone goes there, like a potential customer, they can determine pretty quickly whether Darren is the person for them or not. And so that's how I filter out the potentials, the tire kickers, the customers that I actually don't want versus the customers I do want. But by no means is every car owner your customer. And by no means, just because they make a crap load of money, do they even care about detailing, period.
So what would your suggestion be then for people to narrow that down? Because if it is someone just starting out, maybe, I mean, I'm guilty of saying that, of like, everyone's my customer, or anyone who drives a car is my customer. So what would your suggestion be to someone who's trying to narrow that down?
Well, the first thing I would say is that that's still a valid point, but it's just a simplification, because really everyone could be your customer if they had a car. Now, me personally, I deal in cars. I'll deal in everything from cars, boats, airplanes, RVs, commercial equipment. There literally isn't anything I have not touched. Golf carts. I literally had this one company, because I was servicing their cars. They had a refrigerator in their warehouse that the employees used. And the owner of the company came out and said, "Darren, that thing is disgusting. Could you literally detail my refrigerator?" It's literally anything goes. Mm. So you could say that every car owner is your customer. So, for example, I personally have decided, and this is just something I've taken upon myself, to become very diversified. So I do like paint chip repair, scratch repair. These are all kind of search term specific niches that my website is configured for. And so at a level, I could walk up to any car owner and I could look at their car and say, "Hey, I could fix that, or I could clean that, or I could resolve that problem for you." Whether it's a smell in the car, maybe they had someone that threw up in the car, maybe they had a dog that crapped in the car, maybe there's a scratch on the car, maybe there's a chip on the car. I mean, go down the list. Maybe they want the emblems removed, the badges. I do debadging. So I could go very broad, but that's because I've decided to take it upon myself to learn the craft into each of those areas. How would you – so that would be one step, is that you become diversified. Now, if you're first starting out, I don't recommend that, because I think you should start with the basics, because you can make money with just the basics: washing, clay barring, and waxing. You could keep it that simple and still make money. And by the way, you wouldn't even have to go further than that. And that could be your little niche. Agreed. Audience is, yep, just wash, clay, and wax. Most people are going to understand most of that. The only, you know, the claying part, the decontaminating part, there'll be a little mystery on that, but that's easily resolved. So, but once again, to bring it back to the internet, that's how I, and I know you yourself also, that's how you filter out, and that's how you kind of get that more laser focused target onto the right customer or the people that are interested in detail services, because they come looking for you in what is called a search. So they will type in, they'll go to Google or Bing or Yahoo, and they'll decide, for example, you and I live in Orange County. Orange County can be kind of simplified as to just a really big city, even though it probably has, I don't know, 20 cities within it. So people, a popular search term is auto detailing Orange County. Bam. Who comes up on the first page? Bam. Let's click on that website. They come to my website. Bam. They go, oh my gosh, look at this guy's prices. Hell no. So they leave. That's fine. I don't even know that's happening. Or they read the page and they say, hey, this is Darren makes a compelling argument. I think I'm interested. I'm going to give him a call, or I'm going to click on the detail pricing page and see what he has to offer. You know what? This sounds like the guy for me. I'm going to call him and make an appointment, or I'm going to ask him some questions. So once again, it would be the power of the internet to answer your additional follow-up question, Jimbo.
Yep. And you do, I just did a search after the maps, result on Google for my, which would be location specific. So I'm not getting,
that's a little caveat. Yeah.
Yeah. But after that, and after Yelp, actually Richard Lynn outpaces you, but you have after, so there's Yelp as the first review, as the first spot, then Richard, and then you have the next two though. So you are 3 and 4, which I think is pretty cool. And then again, on the second page. So you occupy 2 of the first 4 or first 5 results, which I think is actually pretty significant.
It is. Anyway. And people out there are going to think like, wow, Darren's phone must be ringing off the hook. It's like, well, actually it's not. Do I take a lot of calls? Yes. Do I get a lot of calls? Yes. But once again, and this is the byproduct of being in business long enough, is that I don't take on every customer.
Yep.
I used to, because I was, you know, hungrier. I was more desperate. I was just beginning out. So I was the yes man. It's like, hey, I will do anything just to get some money coming in, because I just got to stay in business. It's sink or swim, whatever. Obviously, that's different today.
And there's no shame in that game, by the way. If you're in that, everyone kind of has to go through that stage. Yeah. You know, it took me probably 3 or 4 years of just like taking anything that I could before I started getting to the point of like, okay, I don't have to like beat the pavement every single day, you know, walking into office buildings trying to drum up work. You know, it does take a while to do that.
So you did actually do that. Well, good
I did.
For you.
I did. And that is by far the worst possible thing you could ever do. unless you want to grow a thick skin and get, I think it's, you know, I would say looking back on it, it's a good exercise in like selling skills. I never once landed a job from it, to be honest, of like essentially cold calling or cold walking in.
Okay.
I did like set up in parking lots strategically and do like my own car or my dad's car in hopes of other people seeing me, and that worked pretty
effectively. Which is a good strategy, by the way, because that's what I would call power of suggestion,
right?
Or the herd mentality. Mm-hmm. It's like because in a lot of ways, what people that are new to the industry or thinking about getting into it don't understand is that detailing in a lot of ways is an impulse spend.
It is.
People suddenly get a hair up their butt and decide, oh my gosh, I got to get my car detailed. And they go searching and they think, hey, Darren, can you detail my car today? It's like, are you kidding me? Like, do you like,
right. You're like right now? Yeah. Cause I'm not doing anything impulsive? Else. Right.
Yeah. So, a lot of people don't understand that. So that strategy that was a good strategy on your part, which is, I used to play that game also, mm-hmm. Because I used to do wash accounts, and a big part of my business was weekly washing. Mm-hmm. So visibility was all, it's kind of like real estate, you know, location, location, location. So if you become your own advertising, you want to be seen. So you pick a busy, intersection. You set up shop in the parking lot, and this is before regulation, you know, city regulation.
I was going to say, now I'm almost like trying to hide out as much as possible.
Exactly. Things are so different. But back in the day, yes. But I'll add this because I have guys that reach out all the time, because a lot of guys, they're literally starting out on a shoestring budget. Yep. And I know exactly what that's like, because that's what I did. And I literally would go around to business parks, and all I would do is, to me, the strategy was going to a business park that is set up, at least here in California, where you have typically the office space in the front, warehouse space in the back. And there's kind of individual buildings versus like a high rise, mm-hmm. meaning I'm not going to go to a high rise and with a parking structure attached to it and just start going into high rise buildings. That was not part of my strategy because I wanted it. I wanted, because the high rises, you typically have what I call the gatekeeper at the front.
Yep.
The receptionist at the front. She's basically there to decide whether you gain entrance to anyone or you get shown the door to exit as quickly as possible. So I don't want that. When you have these buildings that I approached, and I actually had pretty good success, and but that's all I had, meaning I didn't have a marketing budget. The internet didn't exist. All these other opportunities, once again, the internet, that are so easy to leverage if you know what you're doing, like once again, your course is a good starting point, is that if that's all you have, it does work. Mm-hmm. Now, I did have success with it, but you have to grow a thick skin because you will be rejected. And as you said, it is a good exercise in training of how to talk to people. And it's like everything else you do in life. There's a learning curve of anything, detailing, everything. I mean, go back to being a baby. Did you know how to walk right out of the womb? Of course not. You started to stand up, you tripped, you fell on your face, whatever. Mm-hmm. So going into that first building, it's going to be painfully awkward, but that's where you develop communication skills. You develop the ability to build rapport very quickly rather than later. So I think it's a good thing for guys to do, even if they don't have to do it. But some of the guys out there listening to this, I know, that are like on that fence, like, oh, do I start a detailing business or do I not? How am I going to market myself? How am I going to get those first customers? Face-to-face communication and the ability to establish rapport, because guess what? People want to do business with people they like.
Yep.
People want to have conversations with people they like. And then once they perceive that you're likable, then you can build a rapport with them. Once you start establishing the rapport and you build it, guess what happens? You start building a level of trust. People want to do business with people they trust. So it's all these little steps. So don't underestimate the power of what I call face-to-face communication. Does it suck? Yes. It sucks, at least for me. I am naturally an introvert. I'm naturally self-conscious. All these things that work against me, and despite appearances, you know, despite how I talk right now or what you've seen on my videos, in many ways, I'm a gross contradiction of what you see. But that's because I've just chosen to act differently. So despite how awkward it was walking into those buildings, I just chose to act differently. It's like, oh, well, I'm just going to go in, I'm going to introduce myself, hand them my business card, and just try to engage them in conversation and go from there.
I love it. Let's squeeze in one more. And then I got to roll. Let's do this one because I know you have experience with it. And I have more. There's more myths, but whatever. So maybe we'll do a round two. And you have your full list too. So this will be the last one, then we'll wrap it up. It's super easy to find good employees.
It is, yeah, the polar opposite. You know why? Because
Employees suck. Yes.
You know, bottom line, people suck. And I'm going to really be generalized here. a gross generalization because, you know, at my age, I'm 51, you know, I was going to say I've been around the block a few times, more like life has grabbed me by the ankles, bitch slapped me against the pavement about 1,000 times, and then dragged my ass around the block about 100,000 times. So I have a certain like overdeveloped sense of cynicism towards humanity. Now, this is talk about going off the reservation. So, A, people suck. You know, everyone knows how to play nice, nice. I get that. No longer do I give people points for being nice because everyone knows how to maintain nice and play along with like social structures and social obligations. Mm. But finding employees, and I think it's becoming even more difficult because of technology. I think it's one of the ripple effects of technology where we want instant gratification. We're overstimulated. No one wants to do the hard work. Everyone's entitled. We've all had sunshine blown up our asses because we all get participation awards and like, oh, my little Johnny, he's the best. And I want to make sure that he knows that he's loved. It's like, well, guess what, mom and dad? It takes way more than letting your kid know that they're loved.
Right. Yeah.
So the point is finding good employees is so hard. And you and I have talked about this specifically where it's like, I've been down that road. I've trained so many guys. I've had employees. I've had part-time. I've had full-time. I've had my own kids and employees. It is hard.
Any tips on how to get a decent employee?
I could, but I know that would take us because I'm looking at my meter and it's 50 minutes.
Yeah.
So
we'll do a round two.
I feel like every one of these topics you and I could like sit and discuss at a minimum 3 hours each.
And I think we should.
There's so much info.
I actually think people, and maybe that would have been a better strategy, and I'm still recording, so just to let you know.
Well, no, I think this is good because we've touched on some very significant things, and I think we've given guys enough meat, I hope so.
I think so.
Enough meat to really chew on and to go away with some like new understanding and a what I try to do in life, and maybe we can just wrap it up, you know, as far as me speaking.
Sure.
Is what marketing and advertising and business at large wants you to do is to it's kind of like a magician. They want you to look over here because they don't want you to see what's going on over here. So marketing, advertising, they want you to have a very narrow perspective. It's like if you opened up a book and you held it 3 inches from your face, how much could you actually read? You might be able to make out a couple of words, but guess what? That is not enough information. Mm. So my goal is always to push it back. So I don't want a 6-inch perspective. I don't want a 6-foot perspective. I want like a 5,000-foot perspective so I can see the big picture and make a truly informed decision. So I hope, you know, that this is good and we've covered a few points and every subject that we've covered is worthy of like, okay, we just gave it like a 6-inch perspective.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. But we could push it back and give maybe a 100-foot perspective. And then a 200-foot and go down the list where it's like, oh, wow, that's there's a lot to know about each one of these areas. And you and I both would have an opinion on every one of those areas of not only our understanding of it, but a strategy to it, a response to it, a reaction to it. You know, there's all those different areas of each one of those topics.
And that's why we'll never run out of things to talk about.
Exactly.
if you want people want to find you at, other than just Googling Orange County car detailing.
The simplest, really the simplest way is auto fetish. More specifically, auto fetish detail. So whether it's Instagram, Facebook, detailing services, really I'm so prolific on the internet. That really auto, and that was part of my strategy with the name, is something memorable, something kind of provocative, controversial, you know, so there was a strategy behind that. So that's the easiest way, auto fetish, and you'll find me somehow.
Cool. I'm still working on just Googling Jimbo and me popping up. So it works on my own computer, but probably not on anyone else's.
Yeah. So. That's where the internet comes in, that a lot of people, that would be a good conversation too, is just letting people understand how search engines and the internet and that whole thing works, because it gets complex pretty quickly.
Well, maybe next week.
There you go.
Cool, Darren. Thanks.
Hey, good luck over there, Jimbo.
All right. Hope you guys enjoyed that episode. That was episode 260 of the Auto Detailing Podcast. And if you need any of the show notes, any links, any resource tabs, anything at all related to auto detailing or auto detailing podcasts, you could just go to autodetailingpodcast.com. I've really tried to put some serious effort into that website, doing some blog posts with detailing tips. So if you're interested in anything like that, please head on over to autodetailingpodcast.com. There's also a button to subscribe to the show in iTunes and Stitcher and all these other podcatchers. So I look forward to seeing you over on autodetailingpodcast.com and also in episode 261.